Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Galazzo, joined by Peter Flaherty. It's the middle of May. What's going on, Peter?
Not much. It's a very fun time of year, as I think we've said in each of the last like handful of draft podcasts. But on a non-draft note, I'm very excited. My Celtics were able to stay alive for at least another game last night, so I have one more to watch tonight. If you're listening to this on Friday, if you're not, who knows what happened, but psyched about that. But I must say I'm even more excited about the conference tournament week starting up, draft getting closer and closer. We've got Omaha on the horizon. It's a very this is kind of what we look forward to all year, so I'm gonna try and soak it in as best I can.
Yeah, ACC tournament next week for me. I'll be heading down to Durham, North Carolina to watch that in person, hopefully talk to some scouts, and got plenty of writing to do in between innings and in between pitches. So I'm going to be trying to multitask while sitting there in a great ballpark and watching a bunch of players. But on today's show, I figured we could maybe pull out some of the questions we had in a recent draft chat on the website that were particularly interesting to me, or mainly questions I wanted to bounce around with you, Peter, get your opinions on things, see if I answer them incorrectly or if we have any takes. But I thought there were a lot of really insightful questions and comments on players in that draft chat. I think we're getting into the time on the calendar where a lot of people are starting to kind of pivot towards the draft and look ahead and wonder about who their team might be taking and just get up to speed on the draft class. Obviously, a lot of the diehards that listen to this podcast every week are way ahead of that crowd. But I pulled out a few of the questions, expanded upon the questions, and kind of refined them down in some cases. But I figured we could kind of talk through a bunch of the comments that listeners have top of mind. How's that sound?
Yeah, let's do it. I was reading through it last night, as I mentioned to you off air, and I was impressed with a number of the questions. I'm fired up that you had
We had I think like 40 plus total questions, and I think of that, like maybe 10 of them were from Blue Jays fans specifically who were trying to figure out who was going to be available to them at 8. So shout out to the Toronto fans who are very well represented in the chat. Your passion is appreciated. But we'll just go ahead and dive in and have some fun with this and see where it goes. But the first question I wanted to bring up, maybe one of my favorites from the chat, is about lining up shortstops based on their chances to stick at the position long term. Originally, this question was just tied to a few of the college players. I basically pulled all of the players we currently view as top 30 prospects in the class who are either in reality or in theory shortstops, and I wanted to see how both myself and you would line these guys up in order of their chances to stick at shortstop. So going from the top of the class to the bottom, again, all guys that we're going to have in top 30 range, how would you line up Ethan Holliday, Eli Willits, Ivar Arquette, Billy Carlson, Kasen Cunningham, Merrick Houston, JoJo Parker, Steele Hall, Dean Curley, Xavier Nyans, Gavin Keelan, Vahiva Aloy, Daniel Pierce, Gavin Fien on odds to stick at shortstop. I went through this a little bit earlier to try and get my thoughts organized, so I can kick things off if you need. But what I did was essentially tier each of these players. And when I talk to scouts, a lot of the time when I ask them about like odds for a player to stick at a certain position, they'll just use like a straightforward like 80-20 odds to stick. And it's a pretty simple way to convey like your confidence that a player sticks at a position. So I have like odds broken out like that for all these players in rough order. But we can either go through my list or we can talk through it however you want.
So I'll start, if you don't mind. I'll give my slam dunks
yep,
to stick there. And slam dunks, I guess you could categorize as 80% or higher.
Okay.
Which might be a little bit generous for slam dunks.
I've got two buckets within the 80% or higher. I've got a 90-10 and an 80-20 group, and I got five players who are in that mix. So I'm curious the guys that you have.
Gotcha. So I think there are... I'm sure we'll align because to me it's pretty obvious, but I've got obviously Merrick Houston collegiately, and then a quartet of high school guys, Billy Carlson being one, Daniel Pearson being another. I feel really confident in Eli Willits sticking at the position, and then also Steele Hall. And then from there, it kind of goes down to like 55-45 with another college guy. But I think those first five are a safe bet.
Right. Those are the exact five I had. In my 90-10 tier, I had Merrick Houston, Billy Carlson, and Daniel Pierce. And then dropping down to 80-20, I had Eli Willits and Steele Hall. So that's how I had it.
Oh, perfect.
All the guys that I was most confident in sticking at the position. And then I don't have a 70-30. I don't have a 60-40. I go right down to 50-50 for my next duo.
So I have a 55-45 and then a 50-50.
Okay.
The 55, well, I guess I'll start with the 55-45. That makes the most sense. Yeah. I'll start with Ivar Arquette at 55-45. Now, coming into the spring, even after what I saw on the Cape this summer, which was, you know, when I saw him in July compared to when I saw him earlier on in the season, it was markedly better. Like, the game clock had gotten better. The action's a lot better. The comfortability at the position, attacking the bait, like, everything you would kind of go into a game looking for, he seemed to have checked that box later in the summer.
Yep.
And that momentum's only carried into the spring. Now, even after the summer, I was still kind of iffy on whether or not he'd stick at the position. Obviously, the body type is really unique. Not necessarily unicorny, but, you know, he's a taller, bigger kid for the position. But, I mean, what he's done this spring, he's defended the position really, really well. He's been a shorthanded defender. He's got above average arm strength. He's comfortable coming in on the baseball more, throwing from multiple angles. Now, it's not this, like, kind of what it looks like with Merrick Houston. Obviously not. I think, you know, Merrick's the top infield defender in this college class. But I've been pleasantly surprised, and I feel like a lot of people have been as well. So I lean towards him sticking at shortstop. I think worst case he goes to third base, which I think he'll hit enough and especially impact the baseball enough to be an impactful third base type professionally. But
sweet. So I'll go to my 50-50s and I'll see if your guy that you have 50-50 is in this group, because Iva is in my 50-50 group. I don't have, I guess my number here is representing just a tick less confidence that he sticks at the position. I do think that he's done well. I think that he's got the tools to stick there. It just, like you said, it's a bigger frame. It doesn't look like you typically see for big league shortstops. I could easily envision a scenario where he just runs into a team that has a shortstop defender that's a little bit slicker, a little bit quicker, a little bit faster in and out of the glove than he is. I could also see a situation where he just outgrows the position. He's plenty big now, and I think he can pack a lot more strength and weight on his frame. So it's very much 50-50 for me with Arquette. And then the other guy, I only have two people in this 50-50 tier. The other is Vahiva Aloy, who I think has also made some pretty impressive progress defensively this spring, has gotten some good feedback. I think his actions, like in and out of the glove, quickness, footwork, look a little bit more typical for middle infield defenders. Maybe it's just like the body size being a little bit more typical for Vahiva. I do have a little bit less confidence in his arm strength at the position compared to Ivar Arquette. I think the range could wind up being a tick light for the position. I could see him moving to second base in the future, but I would give him a solid shot to stick at the position, at least to start. So those are the two that I have in this 50-50 tier. I'm curious if your second guy is one of the two. Well, obviously one is Arquette, but I'm curious who your second name is.
Yeah, the second one was Vahiva. And I think it's like, if you want to get really nitty gritty with it, it's probably like 47-53 or 48-52 that he does stick at the position. Another guy that fits in the progress bucket. I came into this year kind of not writing him off as a shortstop, because that's just naive and quite frankly stupid to do, but I wasn't overly optimistic on his chances to stick there. But in watching him, it's been a lot better. Like you said, the actions in and out of the glove. He's a pretty decent athlete. Just the entire package there has taken a step forward. And while I think it's taken a step forward, and whichever team drafts him is, I'd be surprised if they don't at least give him the chance to stick at the position and work with him on it to start. I think he does eventually move off and ends up at second base or potentially third base. So, you know, there's arm strength. The actions have gotten better. I just, you know, a professional shortstop and in a big league shortstop, if we want to get a little bit more drastic, that's a really, really high bar. And I think that those initial five guys, you know, you could even whittle that down to two, three, or even four, depending on, you know, how you want to go about it, who are like legit big league shortstops. Like, I just, I just don't think Vahevo Loy gets to that point. And that's not a knock on his profile whatsoever, because he has been a steady riser this spring. I think he moves off of the good old six hole position.
Yep. Okay. After we get to the 50-50 tier, I've got four different tiers so every player now I would say has less than 50% chances to stick at shortstop moving forward, more of a chance to move to another position and play shortstop long-term. I got one player that I have in the 40-60 bucket. Do you have anyone in a comparable range?
Maybe I'm less optimistic than you are, but from here it kind of goes to the guys that I feel reasonably confident aren't going to stick at the position. Like, I think my next bucket would be like 35, 65.
Cool. And I've stuck with just full 10 grade splits. I don't know that I have the confidence to get much more specific than that with this, but my, I guess most optimistic for the players I think are most likely to still move, I've got Cason Cunningham in the 40-60 bucket. Like most people that I talk to, I think say probably a second base long-term. I think with the arm strength with him, again, is another reason that a lot of people think he's just going to play the position there. But I actually do think his actions are pretty solid for the position. I think he moves around pretty well at shortstop. It wouldn't shock me if there was a world where the arm strength got a little bit better, or if he just always got it in and out of the glove quick enough for it to work. There are some impressive shortstop defenders who don't have the biggest arms in the world. So I would put him in that bucket. And then I also have someone in the 30-70 spot that I think is higher than where I would have pegged him at the beginning of this spring. And that's Ethan Holiday.
Yeah. So not to make this boring for our listeners, but when you said 30-70 and higher than where you initially had him, I think we feel a lot similar about Holiday. But circling back to Cunningham, he doesn't have that prototypical pro shortstop body type of, you know, he's a smaller kid, compact frame, but in what I've seen, especially just in diving in on Synergy, and there's nothing more valuable than an in-person look. So I guess take this with a little bit of a grain of salt, but I was like you, I've been impressed with the actions. There's arm strength over there. He's got good feet. There's range to both sides. I don't think at the end of the day, he's a big league shortstop or a pro shortstop when all said and done. He fits in that bucket though of, I'm sure he'll get some run there to start, but I think he moves off the position when all is said and done. And I'll let you drive the bus on Ethan. But for me coming into this spring, it was like, is this a guy that ends up at third? Is it a worst case scenario where he ends up at first? Like, he's a really big physical kid. And it's kind of like, where does this fit defensively? Now, I still don't think he's a shortstop, but from what you've heard, and I think what we've heard, is the defense has been a real pleasant surprise. He's obviously going gangbusters at the plate, unsurprisingly, but the defense has been a pleasant surprise. Like, he's moving better. He's throwing the ball well across the diamond. I think people are more optimistic. Again, it's like he fits in the 30-70 bucket of sticking there. And I do think he moves off the position when all is said and done, but I'm more optimistic now than I was in like early March.
Right. I would view it very similarly. I just think that like entering the year, I was almost looking at Ethan Holiday as a corner profile whose bat was just loud enough that's what warranted him being at the top of the class. Watching him a few times in person and then a lot more video, it just always felt like the actions were a little bit light with him. The foot speed always felt a little bit light for the position. And then just trying to project on what the body's going to look like in a few years, I would assume he continues to add a lot of strength and gets slower and just is a better fit. But yeah, like you said, we have heard a lot of really good feedback about how he's looked this spring, just moving around. It seems like the defense has been better than scouts have expected of him. So going from 37 to 30-70, it probably would have been like 20-80 or maybe even less at the beginning of the year. So just trying to indicate some more confidence and a chance while still thinking that he's probably pretty likely to move off the position. And then I've got five guys who I view as 20-80 or lower. And it sounds like we're on the same five guys here in this bottom confidence range.
Yeah. I mean, there are some I'd put at like 595 and like not to keep killing them because I know it's been a tough go, but like Dean Curley is in the like 595. Like, he's just not a shortstop. And
so my lowest bucket is 1090. I've got Dean Curley, and then high schoolers Gavin Fien and Xavier Nyans in that tier. And
yeah.
In my 2080 tier, I have JoJo Parker out of Mississippi, and then Gavin Keelan who's also teammates with Dean Curley with Tennessee and has played some shortstop, some second. So that's kind of how I'm viewing all these guys.
Yeah, I think generally we agree in the like not a shortstop category. We could get more specific and nitty gritty with 2080, 1090, 595. Like we came into this spring not viewing Dean Curley as a shortstop. I think long term, like we knew he'd hold down the position for Tennessee. I guess hold down is a
For me, it was like expecting him to get a chance to play shortstop and hopefully be able to prove us wrong in the way that like Vahiva Aloy has improved. Like if Dean Curley had improved, I would maybe have or push him into a chance where he's like 40-60 like Cason Cunningham, but it just hasn't looked great defensively. The throwing issues have been a struggle. Like I just think he's going to play third base or second base and be asked to hit. So.
Yeah, like I came into the spring with Dean being like, all right, he'll be a fine college shortstop. He'll probably play well enough at Tennessee. He'll flash the plus arm. He'll probably make a handful of good plays. But at the end of the day, I think he's a third baseman where the arm strength will play. And, you know, the offense is another story with him. But sticking to the defense, I've just been a little bit concerned. Obviously, the actions, which weren't like pro shortstop caliber coming into the spring, which isn't a knock on him. Like that wasn't a ding on his profile. He was still ranked really prominently. But the throwing issues have been apparent in the last few weeks. And I don't know what it is. You know, every guy, I feel like at one point or another in their career goes through kind of this, and I don't want to label it because I don't know what it is, like mental block. I don't want to call it the yips because that's drastic, but something's not working right now and not computing when he's throwing the baseball across the diamond. Like they moved him over to second and that was still a struggle this past weekend. So he's not a shortstop at the next level. I think Xavier Nines also fits in that bucket. Gavin Keelan's not a shortstop. I know Tennessee has stuck him there and he's held his own. He like fits the mold of a guy you could stick at shortstop. He'd be fine for a couple of games. He would make the plays he needs to make. But professionally, he's a second baseman. He's not this super athletic kid. You know, the issues with the hamstring are another thing, but he's not this like standout freak athlete where you can stick at a certain position and have him go run around. So Dean Curley, Gavin Keelan, Xavier Nines, Gavin Fien, not a shortstop. JoJo Parker, I think he also slides off the position, but with JoJo, I think what he has going for him and one of the reasons why he'll probably get drafted in a really prominent position. I mean, you could slide him off a shortstop. You could have him run around in the outfield. You can move to second, move to third. Like there's versatility in there that I think is really appealing. So while I don't think he's a pro shortstop at the end of the day, I think there are other places on the field where he can find a home and be a productive defender. But
yeah,
what say you on that, the final five?
Yeah, I kind of have two different like I have JoJo Parker and Gavin Keelan just slightly above the trio of Nines, Curley, and Fien, just because with Keelan I have some confidence in like the hands and the glove work, and like I think he could go out there and be reliable. I just don't think he's the type of guy who I would feel confident in making like a major league play from the hole with any consistency with that arm strength. I just think the arm fits better at second base. So like emergency sort of shortstop, I could easily see it with him. With JoJo Parker, more just like a boost for his athleticism compared to guys like Nines and Fien, his ability to run. Again, I still have him 2080, so most likely to move off the position. I just don't think he has typical shortstop actions. But if he was a guy who just took that natural athleticism, he has arm strength, like, and got into a pro system where they really did a good job developing defense, like, and he took a step forward, it wouldn't be stunning to me. So I'll give him like a little bit of a chance to stick there. But ultimately, I think like the hit power tool is so good that you probably just slide him to another position, let him worry about hitting, less pressure on the defensive side. So we're pretty much in agreement, I would say, with a lot of these guys here.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily shocked at all. And I think with JoJo, when you tier him out with like where you'd pick him in the draft, like he would rank, at least when isolating the high school guys, at least some of them for me, at least outside of Eli Willits and maybe Billy Carlson, like there's an argument to be made. He goes before Steele Hall, he goes before Xavier Nyans. You know, him versus Cason Cunningham could be an interesting debate.
Wouldn't be at all shocking to see him slide inside the top 10 at this point.
But I'm with you. Him and a little bit more of a not deeper name, because, you know, he's still trending the towards a first round pick, I think, pretty comfortably. But Daniel Pierce, like inside the top half of the first round, inside the top 10 is probably a little rich, but it wouldn't at all shock me to see him go inside the first 20 or so picks when all is said and done.
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our next question here. This was a fun one to do. Who is your favorite prospect in each category? College hitter and pitcher, and then high school hitter pitcher. This maybe not won't have the most like shocking results here, but it is fun to think through which of those demographics you prefer.
Do I have to pick a college hitter?
You do, unfortunately.
Oh, man.
So I've got mine lined up here. We can go one by one, or you can give us all four of yours, however you want to do it.
Yeah. The college hitter one's tough because it's difficult because the name that jumps out to me is Ivar Arquette, because I think that there's plus power in there. He flashed it this spring. He flashed it over the summer with Iva. He like topspun a ball like 106 out to left field of the pool side. Like there's real bat speed in there. I think there's more room for him to grow an even more impact. I don't think it's overly outlandish to stick a plus power grade on him. I think the biggest thing is like, how much is he going to hit? Like, is he going to make contact enough?
Yeah, well, it's college hitters this year, Peter, so you don't have anyone who you feel really confident hitting.
There's like such a give and take there. So it's like with Iva, you have this appealing power upside, this up the middle profile, big league body already. And I think what stood out to me a little bit with Iva too, and just watching him over the summer and the benefit of these in-person looks and getting there early, like he carries himself with for me a really productive confidence and swagger, like not this like cocky you know what, but like he knows he's good, and I think that that plays in his favor a little bit too. Like there's a lot of big league to what he does, and the hit tool's taken a step forward this spring. Like to his credit, he's chasing it just over a 20% clip, I think, last I checked. He's making contact at a more respectable 78% overall clip. There's still some pitch recognition issues and swing and miss against right on right breaking balls. But it is not the hindrance that it once was. So he's got an 86% end zone contact. For me, it's between Ivar Arquette and honestly Ike Irish. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who the second name was for you or who your guy is, but I'm kind of wrestling between Ike and Iva. Now with Ike, like the confidence in him sticking a catcher isn't really there, but the plus arm is going to play in a corner outfield spot. I think he's going to hit enough to be a productive corner outfielder. It's a really impressive hit power blend. Like he's chasing at a sub 20% clip. He's making contact at, I think, an 80% overall clip. He's got a really good feel for the barrel. I guess a cop-out answer would be Ivar Arquette and Ike Irish, but
yeah, I was deciding between Ivar Arquette and Jace Laviolette. Ultimately went with Iva, just given the defensive profile, given some of the just missed concerns that are a little tough to fully swallow with Jace, although I do think the tool set and upside and the SEC production that Jace provides makes him my number two. I do like Ike. I think it's interesting that he's your number two. I think that speaks to just how good of a hitter he actually has been. I don't particularly mind if he catches or not. I still like him quite a bit. So mine is Iva, yours is Iva, and then maybe Ike. How about college pitcher?
College pitcher, I think we'll differ here, but okay. I'll go with Kate Anderson.
yeah, that's your guy.
Out of my mouth, but we've talked about him a bunch already at this point. It's strikes, it's stuff. I feel extremely confident in him not only sticking in a rotation, but potentially leading one at some point one day. And I think with him, one of the appealing traits is also the projectability aspect. Like, I think there's room for
him. Good body.
To get stronger, you can add a little bit of muscle to his frame, so it's a tick up in stuff, potentially a tick up in velo, and what's already an impressive package. So, like, strike stuff, SEC performance at LSU, checks a lot of boxes. So for me, it's Cade, Jamie Arnold's right there, though.
Yeah, my pick was Jamie Arnold. Pretty boring. I think there is, like, this feeling of security I have with his track record being just a little bit better than the other guys in consideration. I thought about both Cade Anderson and Liam Doyle here. I don't know, something about Jamie Arnold and the quality of his slider and the quality of his fastball. Like, I do like the changeup as well. So it wasn't as clear cut as it probably would have been for me maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, but I'm still leaning with Arnold. And then high school pitcher, high school hitter maybe is the least interesting because I feel like we're both going to have the same people here. And I feel like for high school pitcher, it's very obviously Seth Hernandez to me. There's no one else that was really in consideration there. I'm not sure if you considered anyone, but I'm assuming you took Seth pretty easily.
Yeah, I was going to say this one, we could probably just set it and forget it with Seth for obvious reasons.
High school hitter, like, in theory should be interesting, but I feel like at this point we're both in the Eli Willits camp, but correct me if that's wrong.
I'm also with you there with Eli Willits, and I kind of viewed it a little bit as a set it and forget it category, not as much as Seth Hernandez, because I think there are some other intriguing guys in there. But we've touched on Eli's well-roundedness a bunch now in the last few weeks. And, like, I think the one question mark with him is, like, how much power he eventually gets to. But I feel reasonably confident it gets to at least a spot where, you know, it plays in game. I know that's kind of a vague term, but he's a really young kid. I think just as he gets older, he'll grow into more as he gets stronger and more physical naturally. It's really impressive hit ability and barrel sense from both sides of the plate. And it's a really appealing up the middle profile. And we both feel confident that he sticks it short. So,
The other player I considered here was Ethan Holliday, obviously not a huge going out on the limb pick. And then the guy who's really coming into play for me, who I really just love, is JoJo Parker. I love his swing. But I think for me, it would be Eli, then Ethan, and then there'd be another group of players.
Yeah, I thought about, Ethan Holliday as well. And I like your JoJo Parker pick. I think a hit power blend that's really impressive, and he's been a steady riser this spring.
So depending on where I'm picking in the staff draft and our third and final staff draft of the season, I might have to pull the trigger on JoJo inside the top 10 and make sure I'm 3 for 3 in getting him.
I like the pick. The next staff draft, I want to get a little bullish and a little crazy. I know I say that now, but once I'm on the clock, I might just go for the
right,
the safer pick. But it'll be a fun exercise as always, but I think that it could be a harbinger of what's to come this July. So
All right, let's get into our next question here. I thought this one is an interesting one. Someone asked, with the uncertainty at the top of the draft, are there any chances a team doesn't sign a pick inside the top 10 in order to pick one slot lower in 2026? Do you think that's a strategy that should be considered?
It's an interesting hypothetical, and I don't want to be boring and give like a short answer, but like, absolutely not. Teams aren't going to go into any draft with the intention of not signing their top 10 pick. Like,
right,
even for as light as this class is, or like, I guess the uncertainty at the top, like, that's not a strategy that will ever be deployed. Not to be harsh, but
I think that, like, in general, this gets floated out every year or two, like, either going all in on one draft, blowing past the bonus pool and missing picks a year from now, or like, next year's class is really good, so is it worth losing the pick this year to get an extra pick one spot lower a year from now in a better class? And I do think that, like it's exciting to hear about how loud the 2026 class can be. But I also think that like if you are intentionally missing a top 10 pick this year to get one spot lower a year from now, like you're really overly confident in your ability to compare and contrast draft talent a year out. Like right now we're talking about how this class is not very top heavy. It's really muddled. Almost everyone I talk to says it's a really solid draft class still. So I just think like it's crazy to, no one would realistically ever do that. I think like 5 years from now, we could be talking about this class in a much different sort of lens than we're talking about it now. There might be a few absolute studs who come out of the class who just go off. So I think the only way that happens is if you, like you said, no one is drafting a player top 10. I don't think anywhere in the draft intentionally not trying to sign them for this sort of gamesmanship. The only way we see it happen is if there's some sort of medical situation. I mentioned this in the draft chat, a la Kumar Rocker, a la Carter Stewart, or something pops up. There's disagreement, the signing bonus changes, and the player doesn't get drafted or doesn't get signed that way. Even though we're really pretty bullish on 2026 right now, who knows what we're talking about a year from now at the same time.
Yeah, I appreciate the generosity and depth with which you answered the question, because like it's just never going to happen. Like you said, unless there's some crazy unforeseen circumstance in which the pick that was the guy that was picked doesn't sign, like that will never, ever be an intentional strategy.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. We got another strategic question. Will the Orioles draft a pitcher at one of their first three picks this year? That's at 19, at 30, at 31. The last time the Orioles drafted a pitcher with a pick inside the top 60 was 2018, when they drafted Grayson Rodriguez. The Orioles under Mike Elias have absolutely not invested in pitching at the top of the draft. It's been all hitters in that range. This year, they're picking at 19 with a $16.5 million bonus pool. That's good for the fifth best. So do you think they take a pitcher? And I guess, are there any arms you'd be intrigued with? I would lean towards just the expectation that they don't, considering what they've done historically. Although I do think there are a couple interesting arms that might be available. Really, at all three of these picks, I think there are some arms that are interesting. But I would be pretty surprised, certainly at the first overall pick, if the Orioles went with a pitcher.
Yeah, I think
their first overall pick, I should say.
Yeah, I think the cop-out answer for me is, like, I think it depends on who goes and how the board kind of starts to take shape. But at least starting with pick 19, I believe that's their first pick.
Yep.
I don't think any of the arms that you'd probably be excited about in that general range will be available. Like those solid guys.
Say Tyler Bremner is available there. Do you think he would be a name that you would take a shot on? For me, I still like Tyler Bremner quite a bit, probably more than most of the scouts I'm talking to. Strikeout to walk is really impressive. And for the Orioles, who could desperately use some pitching, I imagine he would be a guy you could move pretty quickly. So I would be really into that, unless my guy JoJo Parker is also sitting there available.
If he was there at 19, if that's someone I'd pull the trigger on. I think we feel similarly with Bremner. But I'd be floored at this point.
In our latest mock, I had him at 20 to the Brewers one pick after. So I think there is a world where he does get there. I still don't think I would feel confident that the Orioles would take a shot on him.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting, like, if he is there, because that's kind of the one arm who at least I have circled who could potentially be in play there. But again, I'd be rather surprised if they do. And I think there are going to be a number of impressive, college hitters in that range that I'd be pretty excited to pull the trigger on. Like, I think Gavin Keelan stands out in that range. Vahevo Loy stands out. Ethan Conrad as well.
Ethan Conrad feels like a Baltimore kind of pick to me.
So, like, there are probably going to be a handful of really impressive college hitters. Then you get down to 30 and 31 with their back-to-back picks, and that might be where it happens if they do. Maybe at pick 31 or 30, depending on just the dynamic of everything. But, like, Briggs McKenzie, if he was there, at least for me, Riley Quick, if he was there. I think the real wild card in all of this is like someone like Anthony Ianson.
Yeah, he's been so good.
For me, that's still a little bit rich. He's made himself a lot of money this spring, especially in the last couple of weeks. Like, the stuff's ticked up. There's always been strikes. No doubt starter. 30 to 31 still feels a little rich, but like Briggs McKenzie, Riley Quick.
I think the two college left-handers in this range, Zach Root at Arkansas and then Joseph Jirwa at Michigan State, I'd be really intrigued with them sort of in this back of the first round, comp round range.
Yeah, I mean, even if Jirwa is like a 4 or 5 starter, it's such a unique body type, like 6'7", 6'8", lefty, lower slot guy. Mm-hmm. The stuff isn't thunderous by any means, but it's a plus changeup for me. The fastball, a little bit of life through the zone, especially the arm side.
Right. And I think you could live with like thinking the upside is a number 4, number 5 starter with your third pick. And also like just doing some of these redrafts, there are a lot of back of the rotation starters that in hindsight go in this like 15 plus range.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'd be in the degree of how surprised I'd be if they go with an arm, at least just envisioning how the board will go in my mind. I'd be really surprised at 19 if they go with an arm, just given who would be there or who wouldn't be there. But I think if you're looking for him to do it, it might be at 30 or 31. But
yeah, I also just don't generally associate Baltimore with high school pitching this high. I would probably be surprised in general if they took a high school arm at any of these picks, just given how they tend to operate. But maybe with a huge bonus pool and this sort of pick capital, they would be a little more risk tolerant. Not sure.
Yeah, we agree all the way.
Let's see. We got another question that I thought was interesting to think through about the Mariners. With the Mariners being so good at developing pitching, plus struggling to attract free agent hitters to Seattle, doesn't it make more sense for the Mariners to target a hitter third overall? I actually think you could argue this both ways. That intuitively makes sense to me. Like, if you think you do a really good job developing pitching, you think you're deep on pitching, take a hitter, fill an area of need. But also, like, if you're good at developing pitching, why not take a pitcher and have success with that demographic with a talent that you don't typically get access to picking third overall? I mean, if Seth Hernandez is on the board and you're really good at developing pitching, maybe one of the best orgs in developing pitching, that's like almost a match made in heaven for you, for Seth. Like, getting an ace caliber talent in a really good pitching development system sounds awesome to me. And I think it's much harder to get a legitimate ace than a quality big league hitter. So I think you could easily argue it the other way and just say, like, play to your strengths. Ultimately, I think it's like whatever talent you've used best, you should take that talent. But what are your thoughts on this conversation?
I think at this range, and you could even stretch it out to top half of the first round or your first pick in general, no matter where you're picking. Like, I think you just take the player that's at the top of your board, regardless of its position. Like, you take the number one guy, and like, I don't think you should draft necessarily totally need based, especially at number 3 overall. But like, I think with Seattle, you know, if you've got a hitter at the top of their board, like, they've got their number one hitter on their pref list, their number one pitcher on the pref list, I'm sure that they would be, depending on who's there, probably a little bit partial maybe to the pitcher, just given how outstanding its pitching development program is. So like, there are going to be a lot of appealing arms there. Almost certainly, at least there's a pretty good chance to be. And then hitting wise, it's like, who will be like Ethan Holliday, Eli Willits, Ivar Arquette, though, like, I don't know if Billy Carlson would quite go that high. Kasen Cunningham, I don't know, would quite go that high. So for me, it's like maybe 4 to 5-ish pitchers and a couple of hitters that could be there, depending on how everything shakes out. But for me, I would just take the guy at the top of your board, the guy you feel most confident in being a high impact big leaguer, whether or not it's a position player or a pitcher.
Yeah. Okay, we got one other question that I wanted to pose to you that I thought was pretty interesting. Someone asked just straight up, Corbin Dickerson or Devin Taylor? A pair of Indiana outfielders. Devin Taylor has played right and left field his entire career. Corbin Dickerson is transferred from Louisville, who has really had a breakout season, both looking at OPSs above 1,000. So I guess I'll just hand it to you first, Peter. Which of these are you taking?
Yeah, I'd go Devin Taylor. Just the track record with him is really impressive, not just collegiately, but he's also been really productive in premier wood bat summer leagues. He showed well in the NECBL at the end of his freshman year. He played really well on the Cape this past summer, before and after going to USA. You kind of have to be all in on the offensive profile with Devin Taylor, depending on where you pick. Just like, he's a left fielder, no doubt. Professionally, he doesn't really run well. He's not a great athlete. So it's like, you got to be all in on the hit power combo. And I think for me, we came into the spring a little bit, I don't know if wishy-washy is quite the correct verbiage on Devin Taylor, but we weren't as bullish on him as maybe we are now. But he's been ultra productive for Indiana. I think he's chasing a sub 20% clip, above average contact skills. He can drive the baseball to all fields. Like, I'd say probably for me, it's 55-55 hit power, and probably the most bullish people on him have a 6 power and a 55 hit, or so it's a well-rounded offensive profile. But with Dickerson, you have, I'd say, more standout tools in general, like the up the middle center fielder who looks like a pretty safe bet to stay at the position. He runs well out there. He's a great athlete. At the plate, he's really impacting the baseball. There have been some big time EV outputs. Now, I'm not sure what to make of that, just given the nature of the college game with how hot the bats and balls are everywhere. So I guess we'll see how it translates with Wood, and then his swing can get a little long. I'm curious how much he'll hit, but I'd go Devin Taylor, though I do think that Corbin Dickerson, when all is said and done, is probably like, fits in that third to fifth round range bucket. It wouldn't totally shock me if Devin Taylor goes like later in the first round.
Yeah, I'm with you entirely. I would take Devin pretty easily over Corbin Dickerson. And I'm honestly surprised we've not heard more Devin Taylor chatter considering his track record of hitting. I feel like we've almost maybe gone inverse with the industry on this one, because entering the year, we had him 15th on our board right in the middle of the first round. As we're talking about him today, he's at 38th. We got really early feedback that he was too high for a corner profile. Like you mentioned, there's not a lot to hang your hat on with him defensively or from a running perspective. But I just think in this year's class, everyone is looking around for hitters and trying to find a hitter they feel comfortable with. And you just said, like, maybe above average hit, maybe above average power. He's done it for 3 years at Indiana at a high level. He's had an OPS over 1,000 each year. He's hit 16 home runs, then 20 home runs. Now he's hit 14 home runs. He hit well in the Cape Cod League. He hit well with Team USA. Like, we're talking about Ike Irish as a potential top 10 player in the class, while most people assume he's going to be a corner outfielder in the future if he's not going to catch. I just don't know why Devin Taylor isn't being talked about as like a right in the middle of the first round sort of bat, because for me, once a lot of these high school shortstops are off the board, I would have more confidence in him than a guy like Gavin Keelan. Probably I would have more confidence in him than Cam Cannarella, even though his defensive profile is much better. I just think with the on-base skills, like you mentioned, the chase rate is good, the exit velocities are good, he has raw power with Wood. I just think it's a really well-rounded hitter, and at a certain point, I don't really care that he's a left fielder and he's not going to be a great defender. You're drafting hitters in the first round because you think they can hit, and I think Devin Taylor can really hit.
Yeah, it's a compelling argument. I think it's one of the reasons why he could end up being a first rounder at the end of the day. Like, it wouldn't totally shock me if he goes in like that 25 plus range, like 25 to 30 or so. Like you said, all he's done is hit, and like the approach has taken a step forward this spring. There's always been barrel skills. It's all fields impact. He's not a metal bat merchant. So like Dickerson versus Taylor, for as well as Dickerson's playing this year, it's been pretty cool to see his resurgence, but no brainer, Devin Taylor, at this point.
Yeah. So I thought that was a fun one. I think that's all I have for today. Peter, anything else you want to mention or talk about before we get out of here?
No, nothing on my end, but I think in the spirit of postseason play ramping up, so too will the coverage on baseballamerica.com. There'll be a ton of stuff on the ACC tournament, the SEC tournament. regionals as they get going and run of the College World Series, the draft. So there'll be tons of stuff on a daily basis. So yep. It'll be a fun stretch here.
Yeah, the frequency of the mock drafts are about to increase as we get closer. We're in the process of putting together the first edition of the BA 500, which will get a few updates before the draft is here. Like you mentioned, conference tournaments, draft combine is not too far away. We'll be out at the combine watching players, talking to players there. So that'll be fun. But yeah, thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for supporting Baseball America in general. We really appreciate it. For Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.